First up today, a familiar voice on KCUR, Charles Ferruzza. He's the restaurant reviewer for The Pitch. He talks about food on KCUR's Central Standard, and by golly, it's about time that he talked about food on this show. This weekend, he's giving a talk that says it all, Steaks, Stockyards, and Sin, Kansas City's Meat and Potato Pass. It's at 2 o'clock Sunday at the Central Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. And Charles, welcome, and man, where have you been? It's about time I got you in
here.
Well,
thank you, Steve. I've always wanted to be on this show.
So good to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah. How long have you been talking about food on KCUR?
I think, let's see.
Just yesterday, right?
No, I think I made my first appearance on the Walt Bodine Show in 1985 or 86.
No kidding.
I was a child.
No kidding.
Yes. I think I'd only been to the Town Topic, but I improvised.
Just let her go.
Yeah, I just faked it.
And what a run you've had.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing this a long time, yeah. You know?
Well, why is Charles Ferruzza so interested in food? What is it about your life that brought you to food? I mean, we all go to food, I get
well,
that,
you know,
but why you?
I always like to say this, not usually on the air, but, you know, I'm not a foodie, and I'm not that passionate about, you know, food in my off radio or off paper days. But, you know, I'm one of those people that worked my way through college, speaking of your next topic.
Yes.
I worked my way through college in the restaurant business, and I started out at 14 as a busboy, and my entire focus was, as soon as I graduate from college, I'll never have to do this again. And I graduated from college, and I'm still waiting tables, like, you know, for at least 10 years afterwards. And I think I write about food only because I consider myself pretty knowledgeable about that industry,
mm-hmm.
having grown up in it.
Well, sure you are. You're not passionate about it, but you are, though.
Well, I think foodies tend to, you know, sexualize and ritualize food in a lot of ways. And I find it to be pretty, you know, meat and potato. You know, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, speaking of meat and potatoes here, well, give us a quick sneak peek of your next restaurant show. What's a new place in town that you'd recommend?
Friday?
Well, is it Friday?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What are you going to talk about?
Well, on Friday, we're going to be talking about a subject that is not especially near and dear to my heart, chicken wings. Wings. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a wing show finally. Although I've had some really, really good wings lately, I must say, kind of in research for it.
There's never enough meat on them. They're always kind of a frustrating part of the chicken.
Are you channeling Danny Alexandra?
I might be. Yeah. Did she say the same thing?
She said something along those lines. But
yeah.
I like wings if they're spicy. I like Thai chicken wings.
Mm.
They're good. They're mm-hmm. really good. But yeah, I agree. There's not a lot of bang for the buck there.
And you'd go where to get some good wings?
Well, if I was going for Thai chicken wings or Vietnamese chicken wings, I guess I would go to a Thai restaurant like the Thai Place. Or
mm-hmm.
There is a great new Vietnamese restaurant in town, and I'll give a shout out to that. Since I need to go back to the office and write about it. It's called Ifo Tower at 36 in Broadway. Remember what Chubby's was a long
yes,
time ago?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I can't remember the address, but they have some really, really good Vietnamese chicken wings and a lot of other good stuff, too. You know, it's Vietnamese food is a good place to go if you're dieting, which I suppose I should be and I'm not. But, you know, Steve, you've been in Kansas City for probably a little bit longer than I have.
Since you began coming on KCUR, I've been in Kansas City.
Okay.
That's exactly how long.
I moved here 30 years ago. And, you know, in those days, Kansas City didn't have, and this is kind of a nice segue to our topic, which is Kansas City did not have a great array of ethnic restaurants. If you wanted an ethnic restaurant in Kansas City, your choices were Italian, Mexican, or Chinese.
Sure,
pretty much.
Sure. I get that.
And ethnic cuisine has really exploded in Kansas City in a very good way. And we're really, really lucky to have that happen because, I mean, I never thought I'd see the day where Kansas City had four or five Korean restaurants, mm-hmm. Vietnamese restaurants, mm-hmm. Ethiopian restaurants. We you know, whatever you're looking for, you could pretty much find it. We do not have a good Peruvian restaurant, and we don't have a good Filipino restaurant right now, but I'm hoping that'll happen.
And you're talking about ethnic restaurants because?
Because Kansas City, you know, was a meat and potatoes town.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I think it was, you know, a great meat and potatoes town, of course, was that we had the Stockyards here. And when the library asked me to do this speech, this lecture on Sunday.
Steaks, Stockyards, and Sin, Kansas City's Meat and Potato Past.
I, you know, Steve, I doing the research, I realized embarrassingly enough, that I think I would have been a lot happier in the 1800s when the stockyards were really, you know, getting into full swing, because it was so wild down there.
I was going to ask you about the sin portion of the title of your talk, because why am I not surprised that Charles Ferruza has worked the word sin into the title
of
his
talk? Well, I mean, you know, the West Bottoms, because, you know, it was there was a lot of cowboys coming in there, mm-hmm. a lot, you know, all those drivers who are driving the cattle east, you know, after 3 months on the trail.
Something had to happen.
They needed more than a barbershop and a bath. They needed whiskey and they needed women. And there was a lot to be had down there. And it was pretty wild. And I maintain, Steve, if somebody's listening right now and would like to invest in a theme park, I think it's time to bring the West Bottoms back to what it was in 1905. I think we should bring back the brothels. I think we should bring back the smells, because it was a really stinky place.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this great quote here that someone remembering the smells of the West Bottoms in its heyday, that verdant, reeking, subhuman, terrifying smell of slaughterhouse manure, alfalfa and wet sheep's wool, mule urine and man sweat. It's time to bring that back. I think it wouldn't make a great theme park.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
would it?
You know, and there were so many bars down there. People forget.
Really? Yeah.
You know, I mean, listen, there would be no Pendergast if there hadn't been Jim Pendergast Hotel bar down in the Bottoms.
That's right.
A lot of great Kansas City history started down there because of the stockyards. The stockyards, you know, they employed so many people with the packing houses and the slaughterhouses and the many factories that were kind of subsidiary. You know, they made soap there. Procter & Gamble made soap.
Yeah.
Or at least a company that was bought by Procter & Gamble. Nabisco had an interest down there. A lot of important companies started there because it was a great place to be.
Huh. We're talking with Charles Ferruza about a talk he's giving Sunday at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, Stakes, Stockyards, and Sin, obviously about the West Bottoms of Kansas City. Was it hard to sort of uncover and unpack all this sort of what's now becoming ancient history for this town?
A little bit harder than I thought it was going to be. And but, you know, once you get into it, once you uncover the right places, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, I'll tell you, one of the great books for me has been a mutual friend of ours, Pat O'Neill,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the West Bottoms was all those Irish immigrants came in to work in the packing houses. And, you know, they really succeeded in finding the American way when they finally got enough money to leave the West Bottoms, because it was so poor. This is how poor the West Bottoms were. There were a lot of slums down there because nobody, you know, really wanted to live there. They mm-hmm. wanted to, you know, come in. And
some of them were even on the hillside
exactly.
going down, right?
Well, Strawberry Hill was developed because a lot of the Croatian and Slovenian immigrants who were also working down there, It was close for them to live,
mm-hmm.
and
they would just probably walk to work.
They
right?
could walk to or take mm-hmm. take the incline down or mm-hmm. wherever they were going. And there are also a lot of billiard parlors and gambling houses down there too. Did you? And I'm sure you know this because you know a lot about Kansas City history, but I didn't realize until I was researching this. Jim Pendergast was able to buy his saloon and his hotel because he put a good bet on a long shot horse,
that's right.
Where he got the money.
I see. We did a documentary. A guy who did one here a year or two ago. I remember that story. Yeah.
And you know, if it wasn't for a good bet, Kansas City never would have been, you know, the place it is now.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 if you want to join our conversation with Charles Ferruza this morning. So it sounds like what you're saying, Charles, is if someone, you know, was standing on top of that bluff, if you could imagine that picture today, current day Kansas Cityans wouldn't even believe what used to be down there.
They wouldn't
much
believe,
less what it smelled like.
Right. The smell and the noise. The noise, you know, you never think about that, but it was very noisy down there because of all the trains. You know, people forget that until Union Station was built in 1914, the only train depot in Kansas City was down in the bottoms. It was Union Depot, and it just flooded one too many times.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally decided enough was enough. And you know, flooding is pretty...
I was going to say, flooding is integral to this story, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the flood of 1951 really was the, more or less, although it hung around for a little bit afterwards, but the big flood of 1951 finally really killed off the stockyards. Mm-hmm. They couldn't survive those losses.
Too much damage, and it had happened several times before then, too.
Many, many times. The worst being, I think, 1908,
mm-hmm.
and all the, you know, all those dead cattle, all those dead pigs. You can, speaking of smells, can you imagine that?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? You wanted to talk about the Golden Ox Restaurant. It was created almost accidentally. It's obviously still rolling along today. Two of the greatest restaurateurs in Kansas City history opened that place, Paul Robinson and Ralph Gaines.
Well, it was opened by the president of the Kansas City Stockyard Company, Jay Dillingham. He
mm-hmm.
wanted a good upscale. You know, Kansas City never really had, unless you count the Savoy, a real upscale steakhouse. There were lots and lots of steakhouses in Kansas City, including the never-to-be-forgotten Majestic Steakhouse. I'm talking about the original one on 31st Street, which was kind of a mob hangout.
Huh.
You would have loved that place, too.
On 31st Street? I didn't know it used to be up there. Yeah.
And, for years and years, that was the legendary Majestic, not like the one that exists today on Broadway, but, you know, different.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Jay Dillingham brought in for the first manager of his new Golden Ox restaurant, this was in 1950, a restaurateur out of Chicago named Ralph Gaines. And we all know Ralph Gaines because he opened the Colony Steakhouse, which was for years at 35th and Broadway
mm-hmm.
in the Ambassador Hotel. What people don't know is that Ralph Gaines, he was a very, very shrewd guy. He also had the Lobster Pot and a couple of other restaurants in Kansas City. But Ralph Gaines was very clever, and he only came to Kansas City if Jay Dillingham offered him this sweetheart deal where he got a percentage of the profits from the Golden Ox.
Hmm.
So, Steve, at one point, Ralph Gaines was making more money than Jay Dillingham, but he opened the Colony on the sly. Jay Dillingham didn't know that his number one competitor for the Golden Ox was the Colony Steakhouse, and he didn't know that his manager owned it. And
that's a sly guy.
Yeah. And so on Christmas Eve 1953, after Jay Dillingham realized that Ralph Gaines had been not totally truthful with him, he called him into his office and he said, do you have the keys to this restaurant? And Ralph Gaines said, yes, why? He goes, hand them to this guy over here. And the guy sitting there waiting to take Ralph Gaines' job as the manager of the Golden Ox was Paul Robinson. And that was Paul's first big restaurant job. And then, of course, he later, I think he quit because he went into business with Joe Gilbert. And, of course, they founded the Gilbert Robinson Restaurant Empire.
Oh, there you go.
So, a lot of famous people started at the Golden Ox.
Well, I guess it goes without saying that this town wouldn't be a steak and potatoes town if not for the West Bottoms, if not for all this.
Oh, yeah, we had people could get cheap steaks here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing. How cheap? Do you know?
It's interesting because... you know, right, if you look at some menus from the 1960s, like the old Jasper's menu or the soon-to-be-moving Villa Capri, they both had steaks in those days, good steaks. You could get a big steak dinner for about $1.80. You know?
Wow.
And then you
wow.
could go to Capital Grill right now and get a steak for like $100. I think they do have an $80 steak there.
It's like buying lobster in Maine or
exactly.
something, right?
Yeah.
Same
so
idea.
So we were lucky because, you know, even in the Depression, you could get a pretty cheap steak dinner in Kansas City.
And so, again, maybe this all is kind of obvious history, but all of this, I imagine, slowed down the wave of ethnic restaurants that rolled into town that you were talking about or were in better shape now than perhaps we've ever been before.
You know, it's interesting. Let me just say that I grew up in the 1960s and 70s when I was a kid. And my father, who was the son of Italian immigrants in New York, he moved to the Midwest, and he was always very, very suspicious of ethnic food. And I think that was sort of the although people would say maybe Italian food was ethnic food. But my father did not like Chinese restaurants, and he did not like any other kind of Asian restaurant because he found the food very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very Midwestern thing, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, I still, you know, take friends of mine out to dinner when I go out to dinner, and they're a little bit wary of certain ethnic restaurants. So. But
I love 39th Street. I can spend a lot of time on that street.
It's a great street.
Yeah,
it's all the
epic restaurants. Well, I love this. A now forgotten advertising slogan once proclaimed that Kansas City was, and get this, folks, where the steak is born.
And it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know until I was doing my research, Steve. The reason, one of the more pivotal reasons that there was a Stockyard in Kansas City was in those heydays of, when cattle was being shipped to Chicago, which was the major stockyard in the United States, to get the cattle from Texas to Chicago, the cattle would lose too much weight. And they didn't really have a place to water them and feed them on the train. It was too difficult. So by having a stockyard in Kansas City, they could keep those cattle fat. And they sold for better prices.
So they would come through Kansas City, then go on up to Chicago.
Often, yes. Although we did have our own meatpacking thing going on here. In fact, the Chicago families of Armour and Swift realized that it was well worth it to have their own packing houses here as well as Chicago.
Mm-hmm. So in the 1950s, then, with the flood of 51, you're saying that was pretty much the beginning of the end for the West Bottoms as we knew it prior to then.
Right, because remember also, by that point, refrigerated train cars were pretty well established, so that you could build a packing house anywhere, including Texas, where most of the cattle was. So you didn't really have to, be traipsing those cattle all over the United States to get them to one certain spot. You could do it right there.
Hmm. What else did you find out about the West Bottoms that might come as a big surprise to our listeners?
Well, one of my favorite things to find out was that there was a street in the West Bottoms. I'm trying to remember if it was around the corner or close to Union Avenue, which was pretty wild. And it was called the wettest block in the world. It was West 9th Street. And on West 9th Street, on the wettest block in the world, there were 24 buildings and 23 of them were saloons.
Wow.
So there was a heavy drinking kind of place.
Wow. Which befits sort of the work that was being done down
right,
there.
Right, right. I mean, you wanted
hard work.
You wanted a bottle and a broad if you were down there.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have, but yeah, but most people do. And it was also there was also a people also didn't realize. I didn't into my research that we always think of Kansas City as being the home of Fred Harvey, who was a major restaurateur who started
Harvey Houses,
the Harvey Houses, and his headquarters were at Union Station. Before there was Fred Harvey, there was a man named George Newton Blossom, and he was brought to Kansas City in 1878 to manage the dining rooms at the old Union Depot. And have you ever seen pictures of the Union Depot? It was beautiful.
Back at the station?
Yeah, Union Avenue, down to the bottoms.
Yeah,
the first
yeah.
And then he opened a hotel that was called the Blossom House, and it was the big, sort of, nice-ish hotel down in the West Bottoms. And at one point, Theodore Roosevelt spoke from the balcony of the Blossom House, and there's a quote from the Kansas City Star that said, "If only Roosevelt knew that just around the corner, it was the lowest level of humanity in Kansas City," because, it was a wild.
I wonder if Teddy would have minded it a whole lot, though.
No. But some of the more snobby Kansas City people were appalled.
So do you still regard Kansas City as a steak and potatoes town?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's what, it's what this town's reputation was based on. And people who come from out of town, I always say, Steve, that if I have friends coming in from out of town, even the vegetarians want a steak because, Kansas City steaks are so famous.
Yeah. We'll get Charles' list of some of the best steak restaurants in town in just a second here. Let's go to some phone calls. William from Leawood. William, you're on Up to Date with Charles Ferruzza. Good morning.
Great show, gentlemen. I just sitting here listening to you guys. It's kind of not very good. But
that's okay, William.
I called your show yesterday, Steve, and I was telling you that I'm moving my technology company from Olathe to South San Jose, California.
I remember that call, William.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say today that, Charles, I whenever I go to a new restaurant, whether it's in Prairie Fire or whatever, I like to carry a picture of you in my wallet, and I show that to the manager, and I go, if this man ever shows up in your restaurant, better take really good care of him because you're going to get a bad write-up in the pitch if you don't.
Well, just so you know, William, I always go in costume to restaurants. In fact, my latest costume is I wear a prom gown and a tiara. No one would recognize me, even when I don't shave.
The new steak restaurant that opened up in the Prairie Fire area, which is a really cool little area. I hope you've been there. I'm not a big suburban guy, even though I live there. I think they're care of them. You might just save yourself. But here's my question to you. I appreciate the history of actually writing down some of the stuff you're saying because it's important to me. I'm an amateur cook. I'm self-taught. And when I'm moving to San Jose, but I'm also going to be living in Carmel. And I was there 3 weeks ago looking at houses and restaurants, and I'm looking to buy a restaurant, minority stake in a restaurant there. And a lady sitting next to me goes, if you're going to move here from Kansas City, please don't open up another fufu French restaurant like this one because we have plenty of them. We're tired of healthy food. Bring us some fried chicken from Kansas City. And I start thinking, wow, you know what? This lady owns a store here. She's born and raised in Carmel. And my idea of good food is completely different, you know, sushi, French food, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking about Coco Vance. She's thinking about fried chicken and steaks from Kansas City. And so my question to you is, if you were to buy a restaurant.
Which would never happen in a cold day in hell.
In Northern California, let's say, you know, Carmel, very affluent area.
I've been to Carmel. Huh?
Yeah, it's beautiful. And we're moving there in October. So I wanted to know if you were me, first of all, you wouldn't buy a restaurant. That's good advice. Many friends of mine who've owned restaurants have told me that for 20 years. But what would be something you would take the history of Kansas City, the nostalgia, and besides just steak, and take it over there?
That's good. Charles, what do you think? Yeah.
Well, William, did you ever go to Mrs. Peter's Fried Chicken in Kansas City, Kansas?
I did. I've been to all the good restaurants. I've been here about 32 years. And I know more
I think it's time. I think it's time for you to recreate Mrs. Peter's in Carmel. And when I say that, I mean Mrs. Peter's.
What about Stroud's?
I love Stroud's, but you know Stroud's is sort of a its own animal. Bad pun there, but but Mrs. Peter's was great because really the chicken wasn't that spectacular. I always thought the pieces of chicken there were kind of scrawny. But that being said, the side dishes were so great. And I think, you know, if you had waitresses, you know, in gingham outfits, I mean, you know, it's a little campy and a little over the top, but gingham outfits, and they were serving, you know, bowls of succotash and biscuits straight from the oven, I think you would make a fortune.
No kidding.
Yeah.
There's your recommendation, William.
Thank you so much.
Start it up and let us know how it goes, okay?
All right, we'll let you know. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, William. Let's go to Joel from Overland Park. Joel, you're on Up to Date with Charles Ferruza. Good morning.
Good morning. I've enjoyed listening to this history here. And you talked about a half hour ago about certain ethnicities of restaurants.
Uh-huh.
Why doesn't this town support a Jewish deli?
I knew that question was going to come. And
can I go to the West Bottoms and get a corned beef sandwich?
If you could take me with you, I would go with you for that. I come from a Midwestern town of Indianapolis that has, you know, a couple of really, really great delicatessens. And I've never been able to figure out why Kansas City has such a hard time supporting that. And because in its very, very long history, in the 1920s, there were probably 35 delicatessens in Kansas City, and now we have none. I don't think the ethnic issue is I think delicatessen food is considered really heavy and fattening. And
a corned beef sandwich is not fattening. You go to Jason's, that's probably their biggest seller. But you compare that to a Chicago corned beef or a New York corned beef.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking of a corned beef sandwich that, you know, a weightlifter could, you know, could pick up. I don't want any, you know, I don't want, you know, something with budding meat on it, you know. Yeah. I want real stuff. So it's, I don't know why Kansas City doesn't want to support it. There is a new delicatessen that I kind of like a lot down on 9th Street, the Milwaukee Delicatessen, which uses an old Kansas City name. There used to be a Milwaukee Delicatessen.
In the Bottoms or so?
No, not far from the library, actually.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And it's pretty good, although I've got to tell you, I do not like the Reuben sandwich because they put mustard on it. So,
Joel, thank you for the call. So without further ado, if you had a name or cite 3 or 4 or 5 of the best places in town to get a steak these days, what would you say?
Okay, I'm a big fan of the Capitol Grill. I mean, I know it's ridiculously expensive. expensive, and I never really eat there unless somebody takes me there. But
yeah.
like Steve,
but
yeah, but I do like. I think you get a beautiful, beautiful steak dinner. Then at the completely different end of that same spectrum is this little steak joint in Kansas City, Kansas, a 9338 State called the Frontier Steakhouse, and you have to love it. It's been there since the 1950s, and it's there's nothing pretentious about it. They still make their own pies. You can get a really, really good steak dinner for maybe like 11 or 12 or 13 bucks.
No kidding.
Oh yeah, it's
wow.
And then
Talk
you know
me.
I still love the Savoy Grill, even though I think the food there is pretty hit and miss, but the steaks are always good, and. Oh, gosh, other steakhouses. That
Anton's?
I love Anton's.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
16th and Main, you pay for it.
It is not a cheap steakhouse, but it's the only steakhouse in Kansas City, I believe, that has both grain-fed and grass-fed beef. And grass-fed beef is pretty interesting. It does have kind of a gamier taste, but you pay there by the ounce. But I'll tell you, the steaks are outrageously good.
Charles Ferruzza speaks at 2 o'clock this Sunday afternoon at the Kansas City Public Library, the Central Branch at 14 West 10th Street. His talk is titled Steaks, Stockyards, and Sin, Kansas City's Meat and Potato Past. Charles, what a pleasure to have
you. Thank you, Steve.
Don't stay away so long, okay? Come on back.